going into a car lot without knowing what you're doing. It would be like playing a paintball game with some war veterans. You're going to get massacred.
How do you even the playing field?
Best thing to do is to get your own game plan. The first thing that you need to do is to determine what car might be best for you, what type of car class. There's a big difference between buying a sporty convertible and buying an SUV or numerous classes of car in between. How big is it? What the gas mileage is? Just things like that so that you get in the best type car. Once you do that, then you'll try to determine which manufacturers offer the best cars within the type of car that you believe that you need.
Can you do all that before you ever set foot in a dealer lot?
Well, certainly. Consumer reports would be very good once you determine exactly the class of car that you want to purchase. And you can compare the different makes and models, such as the most popular is the midsize car, where you would have the Toyota, Honda Accord, similar cars that are midsize, and then you find out the reliability and what they say and what the expected price might be.
It used to be that your buying experience would then be going to your hometown dealership. Is the marketplace a little larger than it used to be?
It's much larger than it used to be. It's very competitive, but you might have to travel all the way to Chicago or elsewhere to get the best price.
How do you do that without making a fortune in expenditures on gasoline?
You go there by the internet. There's an associated site with Consumer Reports. I believe AARP does the same thing. They go to TrueCar.com. I believe Edmunds.com and Kelly's Blue Book might also refer you there, and they will try to get you the best price on a car, because then they get some commissions from the dealership for referring the matter to them.
So you go online and you find out, okay, car dealer X has a Subaru Forester in green there in Peoria, and car dealer Y in Chenoa has the same thing in blue. They're apples to apples, and one other place in Decatur or Champaign, say, has roughly the same thing. What do you do next?
You try to determine what the lowest price is. You weigh that against how far away the dealership is. Hopefully you get a quote from a local dealership, because you would prefer to go to a local dealership as long as you know they are reputable and have a good service department.
Do you hide information the way car dealers often do about the incentives that they're being offered from the manufacturer at certain periods of time? Or do you say, hey, I'm working with a number of auto dealers here, what can you do for me?
It's very important to let them know you are shopping around and that you are an astute consumer, that you know approximately how much the invoice price is on the vehicle. You need to let them know that you are not going to pay manufacturer's suggested retail price, except in extraordinary circumstances.
What might those be?
If it's a car that everybody wants. If you let the car dealer know, I really want this vehicle, then they will take advantage of you.
Okay, so you've got a couple offers for less than manufacturer's suggested retail price. How do you know when you've hit their best price?
You really don't, unless you're a great negotiator, but you get to a point that you're comfortable with. Going into the deal, you should compare the different prices, get an idea of what you're willing to pay. I mean, you can get down to the last $100, but if it takes you an extra 2-3 hours on the phone, it just isn't worth it. And you would try to pay, you know, a premium maybe to stay local, but if the local dealer is sticking close to the MSRP, then you might go elsewhere, because you can still have the car serviced locally.
Often people trade in vehicles. How and when should that enter into the talks?
You always want separate prices for the used car that you're trading and the new car, or another used car that you will be buying, because If you don't, then they'll try to either lower the sales price in the new car but give you a low trade price, or inflate the trade price, but they'll try to make it up through a higher price on the car you're purchasing. So you can tell them you're considering either selling it yourself, but if they give you a good enough trade price, you aren't going to bother.
How do most people do selling it themselves?
Fairly well. You just need to be patient. You should go to Kelly's Blue Book or Edmunds.com to try to determine the approximate private party price that you will sell the car on. That will usually be in between what a wholesale price for the dealer would be, which means trade price generally, and what they would retail it for after they fix it up and make it look much better.
Is that the end of the discussion then? You've got an acceptable price, then after that you've hit a deal on your trade-in, if any. What happens then?
Then you need to find a way to pay for the vehicle. Before you go to a dealership, you should explore your financing options privately. Credit unions are a very good way to go. You can compare that interest rate that you can obtain privately with some possible promotions from the dealership. If you're purchasing a new car, there are often subsidies from the manufacturer-related financing entities. So you just compare it and try to get the best interest rate that you can.
Would you hazard a guess as to which way is beneficial most often?
Most often, I would say privately through a credit union or a bank, especially if you have good credit. If you go into the car dealer, sometimes they'll play around with the interest rates depending upon your credit score. Sometimes they even make a profit on the financing of vehicles. This has been going on for decades. I wrote a Law Journal article on it 15 to 20 years ago.
How does that work?
They'll tell you that they can get the best rate possible. They'll sign you up, say, for a 6% loan. However, they will sell the paper to a bank based upon a stream of payments based upon a 4 or 5% loan, and then the dealer ends up getting the difference put into a dealer reserve account, and they can get the difference in the funds once the car loan has been paid in full.
And this is still going on?
Still going on, especially in the used car market, and the poorer the credit scores and the higher the interest rate, the more the car dealers have to play with and that they can get the interest rates kicked up.
So why is it still allowed? Other than the convenience of going to a dealer and getting it all taken care of there, it doesn't seem like there's much reason for a consumer to go that route.
No, there isn't. You need to make sure that the dealer isn't marking up what is called the buy rate for the consumer to get an extra profit by financing the vehicle. I mean, no one would object to paying $100 or $200 for the convenience of having the dealer process it and get them a good rate. It's just if the consumer would qualify for a 4% loan and the dealer signs them up for a 6% loan, that is something that the consumers need to object to.
When you go to a car lot, are there things you absolutely should avoid?
Ignore them when they tell you, what can I do to get you to buy this car today? You should wait 48 hours to make sure that is truly what you want. You just don't go to a car lot, try out a car, and decide to buy it that day. That's impulsive buying, and that's why they have the banners and the balloons and everything else to make it a carnival, trying to get impulse buying. Another thing you should never do is to give them the keys to your car unless you've decided to purchase a car and they are going to estimate your trade value. There's been instances in which unscrupulous car dealers, not here in town but around the country, have taken the car and the keys and they hold the car for an hour, 2 hours while they try to close the deal. Another thing that you should not do is to give them your Social Security number unless you have authorized them to seek financing options on the vehicle. You do not want the car dealer to plug that number into their credit reporting information system, because then it will show up on the credit reports as being what is called a pull. Or they could shop it around to two or three different potential lenders, and then you would have several different credit pulls on your credit report, and in some instances that could be negative for you.
Why is that bad?
They take a look at the number of persons who are trying to offer you loans, and they might treat it as a rejection. Fortunately, the credit reporting industry has partially caught on to this, and they might discount when there are a number of pulls on your credit report based upon one transaction, such as an attempted car purchase.
There's always, it seems, one more thing that gets offered or suggested. What do you think of those kinds of things?
Those are almost all the time, especially on new cars, unnecessary and overpriced.
What are the range of things that you should look very warily at?
Well, the first thing you need to be wary about is an extended service contract. For a new car, you don't need one because you have the manufacturer's warranty, so you don't need an extended warranty until the manufacturer's warranty expires. For a used car, it might be helpful, but you need to know approximately how much a fair price is for an extended warranty on the vehicle. Often the dealers mark up the extended warranty cost 50 or 100%. Sometimes the consumers believe it is an independent warranty, but instead it is a scam called a Wizard of Oz warranty, in which the money is sent to an administrator who takes a cut of the fee and then puts the rest in a bank account with the dealer's name on it, and the dealer profits if the dealer can keep the warranty claims on the vehicle low. There's other products also. There's one called gap insurance, which will cover the difference between the value of a car at the time of an accident or theft and the loan value at the time. However, instead of paying a dealer $700 for the product, you can get the same coverage through your insurance carrier for $25 to $50 per year.
Often, dealers will, when a buyer declines the extended warranty, ask you to sign a piece of paper acknowledging that you have declined an extended warranty. What's the purpose of that?
The dealer is trying to document it internally more than anything else, I believe. The sales managers and everybody else are supposed to offer these products to the consumer. It probably is also used to scare the consumer, and then it's a talking point that they'll use that to buttress the situation where the car breaks down shortly after you purchase it on a used car. If they sell a car with a known defect and they do not disclose it to you, it does not matter if they get you to sign a disclaimer saying you're purchasing this car as is. They try that, but it is not the law in the state of Illinois. It's not the law around the country, and I've been successful on that for about 28, 29 years.
Dan Dineen frequently represents car buyers against dealerships. Thanks for joining us.
You're welcome, Charlie.
I'm Charlie Schlenker.